Arteta v Guardiola, Haaland v Odegaard, Rice v Rodri, Emirates v Etihad, and it is Kaya Kainak versus Simon Collins. This is the Arsenal Beat. Hello everyone and welcome back to the Arsenal Beat. We hope you enjoyed an international break that by and large went past without incident for the Gunners. I'm Mark Man Bryans, and joining me today to look ahead to a massive Easter Sunday clash between Manchester City and Arsenal are Simon Collins from the Evening Standard and Football London's Kaya Kainak. As well as looking towards the top of the table, we'll also have our usual Thursday preview debate. And given we've been away for a long while, we thought we'd throw in a rogue guest, the Gooner, too. Let's get to the City game shortly, fellas. I think the most important question of this stage of the season. Simon, what are you hoping for from the Easter Bunny? What's your favourite Easter egg? What are we chatting?
Oh, I tell you what, actually, before I came on the pod, a little look behind the curtain, I sent Sam Dean an Instagram video of a man who'd spent over £500 on Easter eggs, reviewing them all for what is the best Easter egg to get. But I've already got mine. It came number 12 on the list, which is the Cadbury's Dairy Milk White Chocolate Infusion, which people might remember was around in the noughties. But I'm always a dairy milk man, some form of dairy milk, buttons. But yeah, I've got a bit quirky this year.
I'm going to say that's quite a missionary choice for Easter egg, isn't it?
Yeah. That is probably me in a nutshell, actually, to be fair.
What are we saying, Kaya? What are we saying?
I know for a fact that my mum doesn't listen to this podcast, so I can talk honestly. And I feel like this is a safe space, but we're on a bit of a track record where she's been getting me Easter eggs of chocolates I don't really like. And I'm starting to question whether how well she actually knows me. So last year was Reese's peanut butter. I don't really like Reese's peanut butter. The year before was a Quality Street one, which I didn't even know was a thing. I don't quite know how it worked. I didn't understand it. I still don't understand it, having eaten it. But I got through it. And yeah, I've lived to tell the tale. Like Simon, to be honest, dairy milk man myself. I like that too. I like Snickers as well. For a slightly less paying chance, I'll go for Snickers.
Snickers and dairy milk, Jesus. Rock and roll in your household this weekend. I always remember, I don't think they do it much anymore, but you always used to, for some reason, get a mug, like a little Snickers, like you get a Snickers mug or something, wouldn't you, with the egg? So yeah. The house used to be full of chocolate mugs. That was riveting conversation, boys. I'm going to start with reading out some numbers for you. 4-1, 1-0, 5-0, 1-0, 3-0, 3-1, 3-1, 2-1. 8 results there, all defeats, and Arsenal's last 8 trips to the Etihad Stadium. Arteta, I suppose, this season is already set about bringing an end to some of those frankly depressing records for Arsenal. But first of all, Simon, can he end this one? And secondly, I suppose, does he have to if Arsenal want to go on and win the league?
Yeah, it's one of those ones where you look at the table and you think, I know, draw's not a bad result for Arsenal, stay ahead of Manchester City. But I kind of think that when you're in this stage of the running, particularly when you look at City's fixtures, like who else is going to take points off Manchester City if you're not going to do it yourselves? So I really think Arsenal need to be going there to try and win the game, particularly with City having defensive issues with injuries, players possibly going to be out. I kind of feel it's a bit like the Liverpool game in February, you know, when Arsenal played them and Liverpool didn't have Salah. You know, again, then you could have said, oh, you know, maybe a draw is not a bad result. But really, in the circumstance, I think they need to be going there to win. And I think they are far more set up than they ever have been in recent seasons to win there. We talked about it a lot on here. You know, defensively very solid. They've got rid of those sort of lapses in concentrations and much more about control. So for me, they're in a great position to go there and win. And with City's injuries, I think they've really got to try and take this as an opportunity to finally end what is, yeah, it's a pretty miserable run of results. I think it's 22-4, the aggregate score from those games, which is, yeah, it's shockingly bad.
Kai, will they look at that 1-0 at the Emirates earlier in the season for motivation, or do you have to kind of just forget about that?
No, I think you can look at it for motivation. I think, especially the Community Shield as well, both games this season. I remember after the Community Shield, Aaron Ramsdale, I mean, it shows how long ago that was, but he was saying that they'd overcome a mental block in terms of being able to beat Man City. So obviously they've been able to do lots of things that they weren't able to do before Mikel Arteta took over during this run. So went to Old Trafford and won. went to Spurs and won, went to Chelsea and won, went to Liverpool and got a good result, beaten Liverpool at home. Probably City away is the last legacy game where they still seem to have a bit of an issue. And you mentioned all those games before, and even under Arteta, things haven't really improved. There was obviously the FA Cup game last season when it was a bit more even, but that was a much changed City side. And, you know, there were changes for Arsenal too, but it was a stronger Arsenal side. And when they went there in the league in the game that actually mattered, Arsenal got absolutely battered. So there are some demons that Arsenal need to sort of exercise going into this game, and that's going to be difficult. But like you say, those games earlier in the season where they've proven they can beat Manchester City in a 1v1 game, I think will be big. And like Simon says, City had players out. They had players out back then. Arsenal obviously have a few doubts, and I'm sure we'll get onto those in a bit. But I think they don't go into any game fearing anyone now, which is so huge compared to where they were a few seasons ago, where I was there for the 5-0, the third of those run of games where Arteta supposedly was close to losing his job before that Norwich one. And it was bleak, and no one was surprised by it because you knew exactly what was coming going into the game. If it's 5-0 again, then something's gone very wrong, and I'll be very surprised. I think it'll be a very close game. And I don't know if Arsenal will be able to get a win, but I think they'll have to fancy their chances of being able to do so, which is different from where it has been in years gone by.
Yeah, I mean, it gets to the point now where I think, do you take a draw maybe just to end that run, I suppose, but will it be enough? Also, Simon, I suppose the wider ramifications potentially that these we could be going back up there for a Champions League semi-final in the not-too-distant future as well. So it does have potential knock-on effect on both competitions for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think when that Champions League draw was made, certainly semi-final path, I think Liverpool were the biggest winners out of that. To have Arsenal and City possibly adding all that into the title race, you know, playing them again. I don't think either side would want to have each other in the Champions League semi-finals, to be honest, when you've already got the title race going on. And yeah, this month, you know, I was looking through it. If they get through to the semi-finals and the draw lands that they play their first leg at the end of April, they'll have 9 games this month. And to put that into context, they had 7 in January and March combined. So the schedule is going to be absolutely crazy for them. And that is why they need to have everyone back fit, which is what they didn't have last year when they had that miserable run. You know, players coming into the team couldn't keep the level. It looks like this time, at least, they do have the options to rotate a bit and try and manage all those games.
It would have helped in some ways, Cara, I suppose, that we've had this, not just an international break, but obviously the Arsenal didn't play the weekend before. There's been a lot of talk about international minutes. I suppose there are pros and cons, really, isn't there? You want the players match ready, but you only have to look at Walker and Stones, for example, and see what could have happened. But Arsenal got away with it almost scot-free, I think, didn't they? We might see Rice play 180 minutes. There are others as well. But actually, leading into such a competitive game as this, that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
Yeah, the whole rustiness thing is big. And I think certain players need a few minutes in their legs to get back underway. I think Partey is probably a good example. Tomiyasu is a good example as well. And that's why they were both given games, the under-21s game, behind closed doors during the international break. But other players can benefit from a couple of weeks off. And the last time Arsenal had 2 weeks off was in the Dubai break. And we all know how well that went for them. So they've been pretty good at utilising those breaks in the past. And I think maybe it's not the worst thing in the world to maybe just switch off from club duties a bit and focus in on international things. And then you go back and you fully focus. And now you really give it your all until the end of the season. And these friendlies were always international ones, at least were all mostly for the European players at Arsenal, were just learning exercises. And none of the South American players ended up going away, did they? So it's all just learning exercises. And it was all pretty low key, I think, for the most part for Arsenal during this international break. And it's difficult to say now how much of an impact that will have in terms of whether it be a positive, whether it be a negative. But it's always one of them where, in hindsight, we'll say, if Arsenal look rusty, oh, that 2.5 weeks they had off was not great. But if they look really strong and they look really energetic and finish the game well, then we're saying, wow, maybe those extra 3 days they had in their legs made all the difference. It's really difficult to say now, but I think, you know, you've got to look at it positively from an Arsenal perspective, and I'm sure Mikel Arteta will be wanting to channel it that way.
Simon, so, the phrase, like, the dark arts of football and everything's been bandied around a little bit with, not only with during England, with Arsenal as well, when they went to Porto, home and away, and that Brentford game. Some of those dark arts, maybe you're learning to pull a Saka out of a squad before he kicks a ball, something that City have done before, we've seen them do. It is having to box clever sometimes, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, it was interesting listening to Gary Neville speak, and he was recalling the days of playing under Sir Alex Ferguson and how it would get to this time of the season and Ferguson would be like, there's absolutely no way all seven of the Manchester United players from my squad are going with England, and he'd almost do a deal with whoever's in charge, and you know, three players would go and four would stay behind. And yeah, I imagine it's a situation where if a player is at any doubt, you know, if you've got any sort of slight niggle, you're going to need to try and lean on the opposite number and say, look, he needs to stay behind. And it was, you know, both City and Arsenal had players pull out at different stages of the international window. I think it's something that's just part and parcel of the game, isn't it? Particularly when you're at this stage, you know, absolutely huge month coming up. There's any sort of doubt, you're not going to take part. And it wasn't, for me, a huge surprise that not every player went away with international duty. And I think you see all the clubs doing it.
It's Easter weekend, obviously, guys, with that riveting egg conversation we already had. There'll be Gabriel Jesus puns aplenty if he's involved in any way, shape or form at the Etihad. Jordan Davies of the Sun fame and Guest Laguna infamy has obviously ran the story today that Jesus is feeling fit and ready to go for the run-in. Kaya, if he is fit now, he's had that while, he's had the little rest to get his legs going again. Do you bring him in for a game like this, or is it a case of if it ain't broke at the moment for Arteta?
I think it is broke in a sense that Saka's obviously a doubt. Martinelli is a bigger doubt. And if you're looking at people to replace them, I'd say Jesus is the perfect guy to come in. You keep Havertz through the middle and you play Jesus on one of the wings. It worked really well in the reverse fixture at the Emirates earlier in the season. And I think Jesus is someone who always turns up in big games. No matter the atmosphere, he's done this before, which many of the Arsenal players involved in Sunday's game, won't have done. He's been in this business end of the season. He's come through successfully, which a lot of the players in the squad haven't done. So his know-how, his fight, his discipline, his kindness in big games, I think it could be important. And I think him and Zinchenko, those kind of guys who have been here and done it before, I think they've got a big role to play in the game. So yeah, off the back of Jordan's story, definitely, because the issue with Jesus this season has not been that he can contribute to Arsenal, it's that he's been able to be staying fit, and Arsenal haven't been able to rely on him at points this season. And I think Jordan said in that piece, since his last start, he's played something like 50-odd minutes, which is not really good enough for your lead number nine. So Arsenal need someone they can rely on. And Simon mentioned earlier there that you know, they've got the options to rotate. They've got different players they can play in different positions. And I think Jesus' versatility in these big games could be massive. And I think he can exploit any spaces that open up in behind the Man City back line. I think he can help whoever the left back is defend really well, or the right back if he plays on the right wing instead. So yeah, I think he makes sense in a game like this. I think you want to have a player like him in this kind of game, and I'd throw him straight back in personally.
You mentioned there about Saka being a doubt. Kaya, I will buy you 10 Snickers Easter eggs if Bukayo Saka doesn't start on
Sunday.
You made
me want Bukayo Saka to be injured now. I hope you're happy with yourself. What's going on here?
Right, debate time, where I pose a question and all three of us pitch in our own answer, and we can't move on until we've decided who has given the right one. It's as simple as that. And this week we're asking, if Arsenal are to end their aforementioned Etihad Stadium hoodoo, who will be the most important player on the pitch on Sunday? Simon, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I'm going to go with this week's England captain, Declan Rice, who has been huge for Arsenal, I think, in pretty much every big game. I can't remember many where he hasn't put in a good performance. And, you know, you're talking in the intro of the pod about Rodri, and it's something I wrote about earlier this week, but I feel like both of them are absolutely huge for their two teams. I mean, we know that remarkable run that Rodri's on with City, over 60 games unbeaten. And I think in the past, in these games, City have really bullied Arsenal in midfield. And it probably shaped Arsenal's transfer pants to an extent. And Rice has brought that physicality, he's brought that energy, that athleticism. He seems to absolutely be relishing the big games. And yeah, I think for me, particularly if he plays in that advanced role and is able to sort of get a Rodri high up the pitch and put pressure on him, I think he'll be absolutely huge. And yeah, he's that one player that I think can make a real big difference on Sunday.
Yeah, I've gone along a similar lines. I picked Jorginho. Now, I was going to ask a question earlier in the pod and I very quickly deleted it once decided I was going to talk about Jorginho, and that was whether we think Jorginho will play. I think he will. I think he's already shown what he can do in these big games, and I think he just gives Rice that ability. I suppose in a way, we tie our two answers together, because playing Jorginho just gives Rice that freedom to do that, to push on, to not be worried about being that anchor man, which for the majority of the time in those two England games, he had to do. And it was almost not sad to see, but it was a strange feeling now seeing him have to revert back to that role for England, which he obviously does really well. But he's been let off the leash lately by Arteta. And I think if you can get Jorginho playing some of the balls he plays over the top, the way he can just dictate a game, even against some of the best midfielders in the world. We know Guardiola's a massive fan. You know, his links to Arteta stretch back to when he was at City and they were looking at potentially signing Jorginho. And I just think, I think we've said it on the pod before, sometimes you make a signing and it's not potentially eye-catching as a £105 million for Rice, but they are the kind of signings that actually get you over the line in title races and winning trophies. And I think Jorginho is the epitome of that. And I think potentially on Sunday, whether he's on the pitch or not, could impact on whether Arsenal can shake this hoodoo. Kaya Kainak, however, has a different opinion.
Yeah, I've gone for William Saliba. I just think that in this picture in particular, last season, Arsenal really struggled without him. It's weird to think that Rob Holding is the only Arsenal player who scored at the Etihad under Mikel Arteta, but that does not equate to him being good for Arsenal at the Etihad under Mikel Arteta. He was bad last season. And when Saliba went out of the Arsenal squad, it all fell to pieces. But Saliba's record against Haaland is really impressive. I mean, Community Shield had him in his pocket most of the game. I think we all remember earlier in the season, there's that one clip during the rounds of Saliba just absolutely bodying Haaland when Haaland was trying to run through and Saliba just shoulder to shoulder, just absolutely wrestles him to the floor. And Arsenal's win percentage last season with Saliba was 78%. Without him, it was 46%. You know, there's similar stats flying around, I'm sure, this season. And I just think that, yeah, you can have squad players who are going to be important and strength and depth and all that stuff. But if Arsenal lose Saliba or something happens to Saliba, the drop-off is still relatively big in comparison to the other positions. I just think that if Arsenal are going to go and win at the Etihad, the way they're going to do it is by being really, really defensively disciplined. So, to quote Neil Warnock, they'll enjoy it, but they'll enjoy it by being disciplined. And that's how I think they're going to do it. They're just going to go up there and it's going to be a really tight game. Someone like Saliba, who's composed, who's clever, who's a threat in the box, I just think he's going to be really, really crucial. And, you know, Haaland will fancy his chances as he does against any central defender, but Saliba's one of the few who has consistently been able to keep him quiet. So I think in this weekend's game, especially when you remember how important that Haaland was in this fixture last season and De Bruyne was really good last season as well and all that stuff. If Arsenal are going to play the way they want to play, Saliba's going to be huge. And yeah, his availability this season compared to his absence last season is massive for Arsenal. And yeah, they'll be hoping he stays fit for the whole of the title race this time around.
I suppose one way of maybe potentially settling the debate is how much of an impact they'll have on the opposing side, if you see what I mean. Will Rice cancel out Rodri? Does Saliba cancel out Haaland? And which of those is the most important thing? Or do you look at someone like Jorginho, who hopefully from an Arsenal perspective can impact the game himself rather than the City team himself, if that makes sense, Kai?
I think Jorginho gives Arsenal something that very few other players in the squad do. I think that he gives them the composure and the control that I said Saliba has, and he's important in these kind of games. And I don't think it's going to be necessarily blood and thunder physicality kind of game. So it suits Jorginho, and he was really good against Liverpool, and he can do that again. Rice, you know, it was interesting that thing Simon was talking about with the Gary Neville show, and they were talking about man-marking Rodri and that kind of stuff. And I don't know if Arsenal will man-mark him, but Rice is probably the player who they'll get closest to Rodri to try and get him to do a job. So I think that kind of stuff is going to be crucial. But I just think Saliba versus Haaland is the duel that is going to decide things. And if you keep Haaland quiet, you can stop a lot of City. And a reason why they'd maybe not look as threatening this season is because, you know, he's still leading the Golden Boot race, but by his own standards, Haaland hasn't been quite up there. So, yeah, I think Saliba is going to be crucial. I'm not ceding much ground yet again in these debates. I'm sorry, it's not really the spirit of the show, but, yeah, I'm still confident about William Saliba.
Hey, if it delays you getting to Guess the Gooner and getting it wrong, then we can keep going all evening if you like. Simon, have you been swayed at all by that, or are you Deckers for life?
I just think I would agree with Saliba if this was last season and in terms of the players you could bring in to replace him. But I think the squad is better equipped now that if Saliba was suddenly, you know, pulled out on the Saturday night, I think you could put a defence together that would be not as good, but I don't think the drop off would be as extreme. You know, I think you could play Ben White there and put Tomiyasu fullback. You could play Tomiyasu centre back. Could even wheel out Cedric if you really wanted to. Whereas, and the same, you know, with Jorginho, I think it would be a blow if you lost him. But again, I think you could find a solution. I just think with Rice, I don't think there's really anyone else in the squad who they could play who would bring what he does to that midfield, like that energy,
Mo.
And athleticism. Mo, yeah, I mean, you could wheel out. I mean, if they play Mo and Cedric, then I don't know how many Easter eggs you're going to buy us then, but they're going to be a lot. yeah, I just feel like with Rice, I struggle to feel if there's anyone else in the squad who would bring what he did. And we've waxed lyrical about him all season. And I think in this game, he would be in huge miss. So I'm sort of planting my flag like Graham Souness at Galatasaray.
It's not St. George's Cross, though, is it? I think I'm more leaning towards Simon and Rice, because I just think if they're trying to make this statement, if they're trying to go there and win and show that they are City's equal now, we should be picking someone that can impact City rather than someone like a Saliba who we're saying can shackle Haaland, if that makes sense. So I'm willing to cast aside Jorginho and hop on the flag of Declan Rice.
I'm also fine for flag hopping in this instance. Obviously, Rice is going to be huge, and he is the gap that Arsenal have tried to bridge. He is the person that's sort of, he's been the bridge to help Arsenal bridge the gap, if that makes any sense in terms of words. So the reason Arsenal feel so much more like they can beat Man City is because they got players like Declan Rice, basically. And City wanted him. And if you can imagine, if he'd been on the opposition team, this game would probably be a foregone conclusion. So, yeah, I'm happy to bow slightly to the Rice bandwagon.
Just to finish on the Rice loving, obviously, Mark, you get to see, you saw Rice last week twice play for England. You've seen him play for Arsenal in that advanced role. Where would you be playing him for the rest of this season if you were Arteta? Would you keep him in that advanced role, or would you have him at the number six?
I do. I mean, he's equally adept at both, I think. He seems to have adapted to that eight role quite quickly. He was speaking actually really well the other day with England. He obviously spoke to the TV broadcasters, and he did a breakaway with some of those guys. And he was basically saying, look, when I'm with England, I'm a six. I see myself as a six, but I'm learning this role as an eight. And I think in games where Arteta thinks he needs Jorginho in there to get the ball and to pull the strings, you push Rice forward. And in other games where, I'm never going to say it's a waste to play Jorginho, but if you feel like you could get more attacking players in that team, I suppose, if you look at maybe playing Odegaard and Havertz as the two eights, then you play Rice as a six. One thing for sure is, if he's fit, he plays probably every game between now and the end of the season, no matter where he plays, because I just think he's been that key. And, you know, Arteta shrugs off the question every time it's asked, but week after week, that 105 million just looks better and better every time, doesn't it?
Definitely. And I think for Rice, you were talking about this stuff he did on England. It was interesting. I saw the comments he said about sort of, he actually prefers playing every 3 days, where he basically plays rest, train, game. And I do think there are players that sort of fit into that mold where they almost look better when they play every single, like, you know, Wayne Rooney sort of struck me as someone like that, who looked like a better player when he was in that rhythm of week in, week out. And I think for Rice, you know, he sort of filled that Xhaka role tactically, but also think in the same way, he's now got that Xhaka thing where basically every single game you just play him, and it's just about where you fit him in. But for me, I think it will be exciting seeing him in that advance role. Didn't think he would take to it as well as he has, but I think it's been probably one of the best sort of tactical shifts that Arteta has done this season, if not, you know, during his sort of whole tenure.
I totally agree. And I think Saka's another one of those players who likes to play every 3 days, and despite what everyone panics every time, he's sort of not taken off before the 45th minute, but I think he's someone who definitely likes to play every 3 days. But Mark Irwin, if he's listening, will be furious at me for talking about sixes and eights. But I think, when Arsenal were linked to Rice, I always, in my mind, it made sense for him to come in as the eight in the further forward position. I thought Partey was going to be playing behind him week in, week out. And obviously, since then, Partey's gone on to have his injury issues, and Jorginho's become a really important player. But that box-to-box thing, those legs that he's got, that athleticism he's got to get around the midfield, it's a really undervalued trait that I don't think there's that many midfielders have anymore, in terms of the ability to be absolutely everywhere. You look back in the day, the best midfielders in English football, Gerrard, Lampard, etc., they were all over the pitch, and and Rice is in that kind of mold and he can do it. It's interesting in that England thing that you mentioned there, Si, and that you're part of, Mark. He said that in the long term, I view myself as a six and he wants to be more like a Rodri type player. But I think for these kind of games, especially if you want to win the ball higher up and you want to put pressure on City as they're trying to build up, I just think Rice in a more advanced position is so effective. And also he's started adding goals to his game, which, you know, is crucial. So, yeah.
It's worth adding there as well, isn't it, actually, that you were saying about seeing him as an eight before he joined. Clearly, City must have done the same thing because there's no way he would have signed as a replacement for Rodri. They would have had, you know, he'd have been earmarked as playing Rodri as a six with probably, let's be honest, a De Bruyne and a Rice. So that thing of him being a six at West Ham was probably more of a needs must. Do you know what I mean? He was their best player. He was a scrapper. He was a captain and everything. And that felt more at home there. But no doubt for club level now, he definitely almost, that's where you would rather see him in the team, isn't it? Right. Usually we'd say stay safe at this point. But as we said earlier, it seems a long time since we were last with you. And if you're listening on a very specific day, let's make your Good Friday a great Friday by finishing off with an expert level round of Guess the Gooner. Now, I've bigged this up as expert level, so Simon will probably get it after one clue. I read out a list of clues and stats relating to a current or former Arsenal player. And it's up to Kaya and Simon to shout out when they think they know the answer. Good luck listening at home as we play Guess the Gooner. I made 39 league appearances for Arsenal between 1995 and 1997. Kaya.
This is already before I was born, so I'm already in trouble here.
Punished for being young. I scored my one and only Arsenal goal in a 3-2 win over Middlesbrough. After retirement, I tried my hand at stand-up comedy and said at the time, stand-up is a little further out of my comfort zone than football, but humour and self-mockery suit me. So you might have to get him on the pod at some point. I was also part of the Netherlands team in the 2006 Party Poker Football and Poker Legends Cup.
Kaya, I'm going to guess, just because you said Netherlands, Glenn Helder?
Yeah, he's got it!
Yes.
Nice.
Marvellous. He was a stand-up comedian.
I assumed you knew he played poker rather than just guessing at random Dutchmen that played for Arsenal.
Well, I figured it wouldn't be Overmars or Bergkamp, so yeah, I went that way.
I'll run through the remaining clues. On the pitch, I came through the academy at Ajax, but made my senior debut for Sparta Rotterdam. I fell out of favour at Highbury following the arrival of Arsene Wenger and spent a season on loan at Benfica, where I suffered a serious injury. Upon returning to England, I lost my place in the Arsenal team to countryman Mark Overmars. I won four senior Netherlands caps, but failed to score for my country. And I'll turn this one into a question rather than into me reading a stat. When did I make my last appearance for Arsenal?
You said 1997 earlier. So.
Yeah, maybe I played for them again at a certain point. He played in Dennis Bergkamp's testimonial that opened the Emirates Stadium.
Wow.
So there you go. Glenn Helder, everyone. I mean, Kaya, you're moaning about being young, but all you had to do was know your Dutch Arsenal players.
Yeah, I have to be honest. If you hadn't said he was Dutch, I would never have got that in a million years. You could have kept rid of me until Manchester City. I would never have got that in a million years.
Your absolute poker face. Right, Kaya, you can knock that up as another win for you. Arteta will be hoping to notch up another win, or first ever win, shall we say, at the Etihad Stadium at the weekend. We'll be back next week to review that game. But until then, stay safe.